It had been the oldest trick in the book, and it had worked flawlessly. Max had discovered the cliff only moments after escaping the underground bunker. He'd hopped off the ATV and gunned the throttle, sending it over the edge. It had been too dark to see how it landed, but he knew Kovac would scour the countryside, looking for his escaped prisoner, and the little machine would be found. He had then returned to the bunker's entrance, and, amid the confusion of search teams heading out, Max had brazenly walked right back in. Returning to the scene of the crime, so to speak, was the last thing Kovac would ever expect, and the facility was the last place he would think to search. There were more than enough hiding places within the subterranean complex. He felt more confident exploring dressed as a mechanic. The facility was like a Cold War-era fallout shelter. It appeared to be fully self-sufficient, with enough food, water, electricity, and space for people to ride out a disaster in comfort, if not style. The fact that it was new and built by the responsivists led him to believe that they would be causing the disaster. He thought back to the horror Juan and his team had discovered aboard the Golden Dawn and shuddered. He helped himself to two bottles of water and a large can of pears, eating with his hand, so that the sweet syrup dripped down his battered chin. He also wound cling wrap around his torso, even though he knew modern medical practice was to leave cracked ribs unbound. The pressure of the plastic wrap eased a great deal of the pain, and the food and water gave him a modicum of strength. Max stuffed a couple more waters into the deep pockets of his overalls and continued his exploration. He passed a few people in the meandering corridors. They looked askance at his injuries, then nodded with sympathy when he explained he had been attacked by the escaped prisoner. He was one level above where they had held him in the cell when he discovered that not all the responsivists would ride out Armageddon in a concrete maze. There was a set of double doors with a security keypad. The electronics were in the process of being dismantled, and tools lay on the floor next to a small stool. It looked like the repairman had dashed off to retrieve something he'd forgotten. Max wasted no time in entering the secured area. The floors were covered in a thick green carpet, and the walls were covered in sheetrock and wainscoting. The paint gave off a slightly acrid smell that told him it had been recently applied. The lighting was still fluorescent, but the fixtures were of a better quality, and there were even occasional sconces. The framed artwork hanging on the walls was gaily colored but bland. For some reason, it reminded him of the law office of one of his divorce attorneys. It was institutional, but a higher quality of institutional. The dining facility was more like an upscale restaurant, with flat panel monitors on the walls in place of real windows. The chairs were heavy and covered in soft leather, and the top of the bar was a plank of solid mahogany. He found a cubicle farm for a small army of secretaries outside a suite of offices and a communication center that would have made Holly Kasim drool. He entered the center and started looking for a phone or radio, but the system was unlike anything he had ever seen. Feeling exposed in the small room, he decided he would try again later and continued his exploration. Set away from the functional side of what Max had dubbed the executive wing were bedrooms appointed like a 5-star hotel, right down to the minibars. There weren't any Gideon Bibles in the bedside tables, but rather copies of Lydell Cooper's book, We're Breeding Ourselves to Death. There were enough rooms for 40 people or couples, depending on the sleeping arrangements. Max guessed that this would be for the very cream of the responsivist movement, the leaders, board of directors, and wealthiest believers. At the very farthest reaches of the executive wing was a suite of rooms that had to belong to Tom Severance and his wife. They were by far the most luxurious. The bathroom alone was the size of a studio apartment, and the tub looked big enough to need a lifeguard. Max spent the night on Severance's bed, and in the morning brushed his teeth with what would be Severance's toothbrush once he arrived. To Hanley's utter shock, he heard voices from the living room while he was rinsing. He recognized Zelimir Kovac's thick accent and heard a second, smoother voice he assumed to be that of Tom Severance, and a third voice that gave his heart another jolt. It was Dr. Adam Jenner, the deprogrammer.